Shalom, I'm Rabbi Arnie Singer, and this is the Jewish Wisdom Podcast, where I teach authentic Jewish teachings, insights, and advice from the Bible, Talmud, and Kabbalah. In this week's episode, I'm going to talk about the basics of kosher. What does kosher mean? We've all heard the term, and today I'm going to discuss the fundamentals. But I'm not going to get into the details of and the intricacies of the laws of kosher, because that is way, way beyond the scope of a 20-minute podcast. There are thousands and thousands of pages written about the different intricacies and details of kosher law. But the purpose for today is just to give a basic overview to answer the question, what is kosher? So, let's start. Kosher is the Hebrew term used to refer to foods permitted according to Jewish dietary laws. Now, these laws are based on various verses in the Torah, the five books of Moses, and those verses are interpreted and expounded upon in great detail in the Talmud and Jewish legal codes. The only reason that the Torah gives for the prohibition against eating foods that are not kosher is that there is spiritual impurity associated with it. Now, this impurity only affects Jews. Now, don't ask me exactly how this works, because I can't tell you. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with someone who isn't Jewish eating non-kosher food. There's absolutely nothing unhealthy or physically harmful about non-kosher food. The reason why God commanded the Jewish people to eat kosher has nothing to do with the physical quality or nutritional value of any particular food. In fact, the same animal can be considered either kosher or non-kosher, depending solely on how it was slaughtered. So clearly, there's nothing intrinsically harmful or deficient in a non-kosher animal, at least not in the physical realm. Now, Jewish mysticism has a lot to say on the spiritual harm that non-kosher food can cause to Jews. But that, again, is beyond the scope of this podcast and probably any other podcast and most books that have to do about kosher. Now, before I go any further, major myth buster. Okay, kosher food has nothing to do with the rabbi blessing it. The food is either kosher or not, regardless of any blessings or incantations or spells. You do not need a rabbi to have kosher food. It has nothing to do with blessing of a rabbi. So, what foods are kosher? All food that grows from the ground, including underwater, is kosher. Now that includes all fruits, vegetables, grains, legumes, as long as they are raw and unprocessed. Now once they're cooked or processed, their kosher status is no longer guaranteed. In other words, you can walk down the produce aisle in any supermarket and fill your cart with any fresh fruits and veggies you desire, and they will be kosher. However, if the produce has been cooked, or say if the salad has been cut and dressed before packaging, then you can't be sure that it's kosher, since you don't know exactly how it was prepared. And I'll talk about utensils a little later on. In other words, while the underlying produce is kosher, the processing can make it non-kosher. So, again, all fruits and vegetables, including seaweed, stuff that grows, is kosher, as long as it's not processed. Now, fish. Fish that have scales and fins are kosher. These two criteria of scales and fins are clearly stated in the Torah. All other water creatures that do not have both scales and fins are not kosher. Examples of kosher fish include carp, salmon, whitefish, tuna. Non-kosher seafood includes shark, squid, lobster, shrimp, clams, oysters. Again, once a kosher fish is cooked or processed, its kosher status is no longer guaranteed, since non-kosher ingredients might have been used. Fish do not have to be killed or slaughtered in any special way to be considered kosher, unlike animals. So you catch a fish, you kill it, it dies, doesn't matter how that happens. If it's a kosher fish, it has scales and fins, that fish is kosher. Now, what about animals? Animals that have split hooves and chew their cud are potentially kosher. Now, these two criteria are also clearly stated in the Torah. Now, I said they're potentially kosher because in order to be fit for consumption, the animal must be, the kosher animal must be slaughtered and prepared according to strict regulations, which again are way beyond the scope of this or pretty much any article that you'll find on the internet. So for example, if you shoot a kosher animal, like a cow, or if it's killed in any other way, or even if it just dies of old age, it becomes not kosher. The kosher animal, the cow, must be slaughtered in a particular way to be kosher. Now, some examples of kosher animals are cows, goats, lamb, deer, and yes, buffalo. Now, non-kosher animals include camels, horses, dogs, cats, bears, elephants, lions, and of course, pig. Now, the milk from a kosher animal is kosher, which is why cow's milk is kosher. However, the milk from a non-kosher animal, like camel's milk, is not kosher. What about birds? So the Torah provides no physical signs that indicate whether a bird is kosher. Instead, it offers a long list of species of birds that are kosher, but most of those can't really be positively identified, even by the experts. So we do know that all birds of prey are not kosher. So eagle, hawk, not kosher. So what are the kosher birds? They are chicken, goose, duck, quail, and turkey. Although turkey is actually an interesting one because turkey came on the scene, at least for Jews, pretty late in the game, and there was actually a rabbinic discussion of whether turkey can be considered as one of the traditionally accepted kosher birds. And thankfully it is. So Thanksgiving is a big day for Jews in America as well. Now these birds, the kosher birds, must be slaughtered and prepared in a prescribed manner to be fit for kosher consumption. The laws of slaughtering a bird versus a cow are slightly different. Now shooting a bird, death by natural causes, all those render a kosher bird non-kosher, so the kosher bird needs to be slaughtered. Now, what about insects? So, all insects are non-kosher, except for four species of locusts that are specifically listed in the Torah as kosher. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately for some, the tradition as to the exact identity of those four types of locusts have been, for the most part, lost. So we don't eat locusts. Although among the Jews of Yemen, there is still tradition about locusts, and in Yemen, at least, Jews used to eat locusts, the kosher locusts. I don't think they do that anymore. Now, we've gone through the foods that are intrinsically kosher or non-kosher. We've got all the stuff that grows is kosher. Fish need to have scales and fins to be kosher. Animals need to have split hooves and chew their cud to be kosher. And of course, as long as they're slaughtered in the proper way. Birds need to have a tradition. We have to have a tradition that they're kosher, like chicken, turkey, goose, duck, quail. And they also need to be slaughtered in the particular way. Insects, there are four types of locusts that are kosher, but these days we don't eat, for the most part, any insects. Now, those are the animals that are intrinsically kosher. But now I'm going to teach you a new law, and that's the law of mixing milk and meat. And the Torah specifically says, in three separate places in the Torah, using the same verse, that you can't cook the milk, you can't cook a goat in the milk of its mother. And the sages of the Talmud interpreted that Torah prohibition to mean that you cannot cook or eat or derive any benefit from meat and milk that are cooked or mixed together. Now, again, thousands of pages have been written regarding the details of this particular prohibition of meat and milk. And you're encouraged to explore them if you're interested in the practical applications of the law. But the simple application to general kosher practice is that any mixing of milk and meat renders the mixture non-kosher. A popular example of this prohibition is the cheeseburger. Cheeseburgers are not kosher because you've got milk and meat being cooked together. A more nuanced example would be the use of animal-based gelatin in a candy containing milk chocolate. So let's say you have a milk chocolate with a coating of gelatin, and that gelatin is animal-based. Okay, that's not kosher. Using lard in the baking of, say, a cheesecake would render that mixture not kosher. One of the most common examples is probably the use of butter in cooking meat. So, you know, a lot of gourmet chefs will use butter or milk in there as one of their ingredients when they're cooking meat, which obviously renders the mixture not kosher. So, even if you're positive that the meat that's being cooked is kosher, you also have to be certain that it is not being mixed or brought into any contact with a dairy product. So unless you're actually supervising the cooking of the kosher meat, you cannot be certain that it's kosher because you don't know if all the ingredients are kosher or if some of them might be dairy. Now there's something in the middle of milk and meat, and that's called parv, and that means it's an item that can be used for either milk or meat. So for instance, you know, all produce, all fruits and vegetables are considered to be parv. They are neither meat or milk. Potatoes can be eaten with milk, or they can be eaten with your hamburger. Now, what about utensils? So kosher law prohibits using utensils like forks and knives that have come into contact with non-kosher food. Doing so will render the kosher food non-kosher. So therefore, a pot or pan or an oven that was used to cook non-kosher food cannot then be used to cook kosher food. Now again, there are a lot of intricate details in the laws relating to this topic, which I'm not going to cover here. But the bottom line is that kosher food must be cooked and served in utensils, in kosher utensils, in order to remain kosher. So for cooking a kosher piece of meat in a non-kosher oven would simply render the kosher meat non-kosher. How about drinks? So natural drinks obviously are kosher, orange juice, apple juice, unless they have certain additives or ingredients in them that are not kosher. Water is kosher, and It doesn't need any sort of, you know, kosher certification. What about alcohol? So alcohol made from grain or other plant-based substances is kosher, just like any other drink, as long as it doesn't have any non-kosher ingredients or additives added to it. There's no taboo in Judaism against drinking alcohol, as long as you don't take it too far and lose control of your actions or senses. The one exception to that is the holiday of Purim, which you're allowed to get drunk on Purim. Now, the only potential problem with alcohol being kosher or not kosher is if wine or grapes are one of the ingredients. So according to the Torah, there's nothing intrinsically non-kosher about wine, since it's made from grapes and sometimes some sugars added to it. But the sages of the Talmud insisted that wine be made and handled exclusively by Jews in order to be kosher. The reason they prohibited non-Jews from producing wine, kosher wine, is that in the old days, wine was used for idol worship. And the rabbis wanted to prohibit deriving any benefit from anything that was used for idolatry. The reason being was probably to dissuade Jews from getting involved in idolatrous practice. Now, nowadays, we don't really have the idolatrous problem that much, or although there is still idol worshiping happening in different parts of the world, certainly not prevalent in America or most westernized countries. So another reason why the rabbis prevented it is because basically they didn't want Jews going to bars and mixing with the non-Jewish population, because they did not want there to be intermarriage and Jews giving up the commandments and becoming non-Jews. So that reason still does exist. Wine is one of the most social drinks, and of course alcohol in general is also, but the law was only made regarding wine, which is probably why, because in ancient times, wine was the prevalent social drink. So the bottom line is, in order for wine to be kosher, it must be produced and handled by Jews. So just one thing about, you know, there, if you go to the store, you pick up a package of food, you look at it, and there are many times there is a kosher symbol on it, whether it's a circle with a K in it, or an O and with a U in it. All these are kosher certifications by rabbinic organizations who send people to supervise the production of the food and to certify that they are kosher. So if something doesn't have that certification, it doesn't mean that it's not kosher. It just means that you don't know if it's kosher or not. So for mass-produced items, in order to know that it's kosher, you need to look for a kosher certification. So I want to talk a little bit more about the spirituality of kosher. I touched on it at the beginning of this podcast, and like I said, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with the actual animal that is not kosher. The reason that we don't eat pig is not because it rolls in the mud and it's considered to be a dirty animal. No, it has nothing to do with that. We can eat, we take a cow that walk it through the mud and make it as dirty as possible and let it eat all the dirty stuff, and it's still kosher. So the idea of kosher has to do with what we call holiness, kedusha. And the concept of holiness in Judaism is connected to uniqueness and separation. In fact, the word kedusha comes from the term that indicates separation. And that's really what holiness is. Holiness is separating from the mundane, separating from the non-holy. And we separate in many ways. We separate from all sorts of sins. We separate from idolatry. We separate from committing crime. Just as we separate from sin, and that makes us holy, so too we separate from acts that even are inappropriate. They might not be sins, but they're just inappropriate. That makes us holy. So God gave this commandment to the Jewish people to eat kosher and to refrain from eating foods that are not kosher. And that in and of itself creates holiness. That makes us holy by separating, by refraining from eating something that we might want to eat because God said not to. So that's what kosher is all about. Kosher is all about being holy, being unique, being special. So I hope that you learned something. I hope you got at least the basics of kosher and some idea of the spiritual significance behind it. Please subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and loved ones. And I look forward to learning and teaching more. And I look forward to discussing more Jewish concepts with you in upcoming episodes. So thanks again for listening, and God bless.